All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton. Week 3 of the preseason edition, final week of the preseason edition. The Bucks have one more game that doesn't count. The whole league does, with a slate that begins tonight as I record on this Thursday. 16 games between now and Saturday. And then after that, we get ready for opening night, which is 2 weeks basically from today. Not basically, it is. And the Bucks opener, 2 weeks from Sunday in Atlanta. And we're already kind of setting our sights on that, but there's lots to talk about between now and then, not even counting the game on Saturday, which I don't think will give us much to talk about, but plenty of things going on. So as we get set for this game, look back at the Pittsburgh game. The Bucks get another win, a last play field goal from Chase McLaughlin. Nice to see. I know it doesn't count, but nice to see just to get into a situation like that where, okay, kick to win it, you know, go take it. Not necessarily a pressure thing or anything, but just to go through the motion of doing that was good. And the Bucks get the win. They're 2-0 in the preseason now before this game on Saturday. So let's get to the good stuff right out of the gate. Well, first things first, if you want a fridge schedule, I've been getting lots of requests. You can email me. I'll send you one. It's the big schedule I print out with team logos and everything. It's on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. I just send you the file. You print it. A lot of you have been doing it for years and years. I've been doing it for years. But email me if you want one. The email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. B-O-B-B-Y-G-A-M-E-D-A-Y. bobbygameday@yahoo.com. And you can also find me on Twitter if you want to, @bobbygameday. Blue Sky @bobbygameday. It's all there. And I'll send you one over, and I'll just email you the file. You can print it out as you want to really just make it feel like football season. Stick one of those babies up on the fridge or in your office or wherever you want to put it in your garage. I always like to write the score and, you know, a win or a loss and all that. I've been doing it for years. So thanks to all you who have already sent me requests, and I've sent them back to you. And if anybody else wants one, anytime all year you can get one. Just send me the email whenever, and I'll send it to you. So talking about this past Saturday real quick, because it was days ago, it didn't matter that much anyway, but certain things did take place that have reverberations, let's say, implications, the most notable of which was Jalen McMillan, who's now out for half the season with a neck sprain after going up high for a pass from Teddy Bridgewater, getting undercut at the legs, rotating, and sometimes you over-rotate, sometimes you under-rotate, sometimes you rotate just right. He rotated, and it's all just luck and physics, just a little too much. He was going to land flat on his back, but he was so high that he kept rotating and then landed on his head, basically. And luckily, he kind of was still, it was kind of half back, half head, instead of directly on his head, where it could have been even worse. In this case, I mean, it was bad. It was, well, honestly, it went from looking pretty bad to then looking not that bad to then sounding and then getting the news that it was bad, because he goes up in the air, he gets clipped at the legs, he spins in midair, and as he's coming down, he's still rotating, and like I said, lands kind of half on the back of his shoulders, half on the back of his head, pinches the neck and the chin up under there with all that weight coming down. Looked bad. Like, I was like, oh no, like, you know, not even worried about his availability, but I was like worried, like, we might have, like, you know, get the brace board out there, and I was like, oh my gosh, this looks bad. Then they're looking at him, and then he gets up, walks off under his own power. He's joking around with guys on the sidelines a little bit, and it's like, oh, okay, hurt, not injured is what I thought to myself. You know, I don't know how many of you guys in the old days, or even now, but maybe your high school football trainer would say, are you hurt or are you injured? Oh, I'm both, you know. But there's hurt, which means ow, but nothing's actually damaged, and there's injury. So I thought, okay, well, maybe he's fine. Then the news comes out early in the week, well, yeah, he's going to be out till probably the week 9 bye. Which, again, the main thing is that he's okay in general, which it looks like he is. And he's out there at practice actually wearing a neck brace. He's not in full pads, but he's still got his jersey on and everything. So he's going to be fine, but tough, just a really bad deal there. And I know the first thing I thought, and the first thing a lot of people thought was, hey, and Bridgewater played well. He had the, you know, some beautiful drop in the bucket touchdown balls and all that stuff. But the first thing I thought was, hey, nice hospital ball there, Bridgewater. Maybe bring it down a few feet. And yeah, I'm not, listen, the Joes brought this up on their show here on JoeBucksFan.com. You know, we don't know. Maybe the route wasn't run where it was supposed to be. Maybe he threw that ball the way that play would normally be thrown and the route was in a different, there's a lot of things we don't know. I'm not going to crucify anybody. It's football, stuff happens. And then Lee, you know, one of the Joes, even went so far as to say the real culprit is too many preseason games. There should be no preseason at all. This is why. Listen, guys get hurt. It's happening all over the league, just like always. This year hasn't been particularly bad with it. I still think, I mean, listen, it happened early in the game with a player who's like number three or four on the depth chart. So it's not like some big-time starter late in a game or anything like that in a meaningless preseason game. It was early, and I mean, it happens. It's football. It's unfortunate. I do think three preseason games is too many. I think, you know, sometimes you think about the future and like, what are we going to look back on and say, man, I can't believe that was a thing. Like, you know how you look back on certain things now from like the 60s or 70s or the 80s, like smoking sections in restaurants. Like you look back now, like I can't believe, like in a restaurant with food, they just said, oh yeah, you go sit over here and you can smoke, and you hear 10 feet away, this is non-smoke. It's insane to me now, like looking back at it, or the way that they didn't have any security to get on airplanes, or that you could smoke on airplanes, or all these things you look back, and at the time, it wasn't a big deal at all, but now in the present day, you're like, wow, that was crazy. Obviously, preseason football is going to be one of them, I think, no question. And I think you do need something. Like, I think it's, you know, football's a game. I know you can have joint practices and things like that. I feel like, again, maybe for starters, just a half of football or anything like that. Maybe you need one preseason game is all you need. Maybe two. But even three, which is a reduction from what all of us basically grew up with. I mean, anybody who's under the age of, like, 50 right now had four preseason games most of their life. They used to have six when the Bucks entered the league, which is insane to me. That's like another season of just stuff that doesn't count. But even four seems like a lot. Then they cut it down to three. Even that sounds like a lot. I think one or two. College has none, but that always seems a little weird. Like I said, maybe something. My point being, though, under the way things are right now, you know, I didn't think this stood out, or it's just unfortunate. And so he's out for the year. Excuse me. Whoa, he's out for the first half of the year, I meant to say. And in the meantime, do you remember, here's how fast things can change. Do you remember the draft when we're all sitting there on draft night going over all the different defensive players who the Bucks can draft with their first round pick and looking at how deep the board was? And then if you're like most people, if you're like me, remember how you felt when the Bucks announced the pick of Amika Buka? Not upset at all. Love Buka, even at the time. But I was really surprised. I was like, I would have bet a substantial portion of my entire net worth the Bucks were taking a defensive player of any kind. And they took a receiver, and we're like, oh, wow, a receiver, huh? What if they hadn't now, looking back? Because now that guy, who we didn't even think we're going to draft, is number two right out of the gate because Chris Godwin is out until October. And we'll talk more about him and Tristan Wirfs in a minute as far as what the Bucks are doing with them roster-wise. And now this whole thing with McMillan. So now you've got Evans 1, Abuka 2, who we almost didn't even draft, or maybe we would, you know, we're going to do it all along, I don't know. And then number 3, probably Sterling Shepard. And then 4 through 5 or 6, depending on how many they keep, some combination of Tez Johnson, Rockham Jarrett, Ryan Miller, Trey Palmer, like maybe two of those guys to make it 5 receivers, unless they go get somebody, which they may have to do. Like, we were talking about how overloaded we were. Like, oh, God, another receiver? Like, the depth is insane. And now, a few months later, we probably have to go find somebody on the waiver wire just to get through the first half of the year. We got nobody. It happens fast in the NFL, and the injury rate is 100%. It's just a matter of when it happens. So, and here's the other thing. That's just what they have right now. But what if something else happens? As the Joes pointed out on their show, those top three, Mike Evans, Amika Buka, Sterling Shepard. Well, Evans and Shepard are both 32, which doesn't mean they're going to get hurt automatically, but the older you get, the more of a chance there is that that does happen. And, of course, Abuka is a squeaky clean, wide-eyed, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed rookie. So the receiving core doesn't look as deep as it was a little while ago. And I'm not worried about it or anything like that right now. I think they have a very good... If Abuka is what we think he is, and remember, he isn't anything yet. That one-handed catch was awesome the other night. I know we all just completely lost it when he did that with the prospect of what could be. But he's still a rookie playing in his first real NFL game in 2 weeks in Atlanta, and you don't know how it's going to go or how the whole first year is going to go, even though I think if you share my sentiment, you're pretty optimistic. But you got an unknown there. Mike Evans has been Mike Evans, who, by the way, he was supposed to play, so was Mayfield. We talked about it last week on the show. I told you. I was like, oh, Mayfield and Evans are going to be out there. That was before Todd Bowles reversed course and said, nah, they're not going to play. And the reason for that was, he said, well, they just looked pretty good. They did really well in the joint practices, didn't see a need to put them out there, which is fine. That's what you want if you can get away with it. And the Joes, who were in Pittsburgh watching those joint practices, I mean, they were saying, they told me, I talked to Steve, and he was like, man, dude, you didn't see it, but Mike Evans, he said he made a complete joke of anything the Steelers put in front of him. Their whole secondary just absolutely roasted them. Him and Mayfield had it going. It was on a string. They just made a mockery of the whole thing. I was like, oh, man, that's awesome. Like, this is great. And, you know, you hope that carries over into the regular season. But that's why they didn't play on Saturday. Again, fine. Don't need to see them if they're doing that. Don't need to take any further risks. So let's hope that continues as we get going. And let's hope the receiving depth is there. And you know, I don't know what they're going to do if they end up getting a receiver or not. The final cutdowns, well, the deadline is Tuesday at 4 p.m. with the game on Saturday night. Now, usually the way the Bucs have done it in the past is they kind of do a few of the automatic cuts, the ones you kind of saw coming or guys who were hurt on the day after the last preseason game on Sunday, handful of those. Then Monday is like the big day where like the biggest wave of cuts will come then. Then there'll be a few of the tougher ones or the last minute ones on Tuesday. By 4 p.m. they'll have their 53, but then again, so is everybody else. So then what happens? Well, other teams may cut guys from their 53 that, well, he can make our 53. We need, and different teams have different needs and stuff. So that even if you make the final 53 at 4 p.m. on Tuesday, now there's more shuffling. Well, this team put a guy on their practice squad, but we like him. We're going to take him. If you take someone off the practice squad, they got to go on your active roster. Okay, put them on, you know, and then all of a sudden there's more movement. So it takes a few days to all shuffle out leading up to that opening game on Sunday. And for the Cowboys and Eagles, it's on Thursday night of the, you know, the following week. So you've got time. But, yeah, it's a whole process. So we'll see. Now, what the Bucs have decided to do here roster-wise, Tristan Wirfs, Chris Godwin, who both are not going to be available right off the bat, are both going to be on the 53 on the final roster. Now, what does that mean? Well, the other option for the Bucs was to put those guys on the PUP list, physically unable to perform. You can be on the PUP list with no repercussions in training camp. But if you are put on the PUP list to start the season when the 53-man roster comes out, now you are ineligible to be brought back until after your team's fourth game of the season. So it's a little bit encouraging that the Bucs at least saw fit to burn two roster spots on Wirfs and Godwin, who aren't going to be playing right now, which makes their cuts tougher because of the mere prospect of maybe one or both of them coming back before week five. And as Greg Allman, who covers the NFL for Fox Sports and has, you know, has an emphasis on the Bucs, former Buck beat writer, he pointed out, you know, the Bucs just may think that even a chance of having Wirfs or Godwin for just one game, even if it's week four by the time they're ready, is worth more than having their extra roster spots for a full month for somebody, you know, further down the roster who may not even be active for most of those games. So, like I said, it gives the Bucs two fewer roster spots to play with right now, but they don't have to wait now for week five. They can play them and print them in there at any time, and until then they can be on the list of inactives each game day if they're not ready to go. And they've even said Chris Godwin is not going to practice until week two. I mean, he's been out there. Like, he's doing things like non-practice. He's throwing the ball and messing around with, you know, he's just at least around it. But he's not going to formally practice until week two and isn't going to return until October. If he returns before that week four or week five, what would have been his eligibility week if he was on the PUP, he would only come back a week before that in week four, it sounds like. Wirfs, maybe, you know, we don't know. Less information on him, maybe sooner. But it's a good sign that they at least did not put those guys on the PUP. So they'll be on there. Who else will be on there remains to be seen. There's probably, you know, I'm not going to do the whole thing where we go position by position and breakdown, but I mean, I would say 80%, maybe 90% of the roster is probably already known. There's just a few bottom of the roster decisions that have to be made. One of them could be quarterback, though. Todd Bowles said that as far as this Saturday against the Bills, Kyle Trask is going to start, and then I'm quoting now, we'll go from there. So how much will be Trask? How much will we see of Teddy Bridgewater? And will they keep both of them because they said they could go with two quarterbacks right now? That part is up in the air, and that one's kind of one to watch, I guess. And beyond that, it just, you know, right now a lot of injuries are being dealt with. Aside from the ones we talked about at receiver, I know, you know, right now Tyke Smith's nursing something at safety. Izzy's still got a thing. His thing is an oblique, and he may not be ready for week one, which is annoying, but it is what it is. At corner, they're okay. Linebacker, they've had a couple guys dinged. Nothing major, just some attrition. So nobody who is going to play on Saturday, it's not going to be anybody of any import as far as potential starters or guys who can contribute heavily, I wouldn't think. There may be a few exceptions, but that third preseason game is always a real snoozer, and I get why they do it right now, but, you know, like I said, I think at the most you need two of these and maybe just one. And like I always said, you know, there seems to be this unwritten rule that there have to be 20 games, so whatever combination of postseason and preseason, if you take away preseason, you have to have a corresponding number of regular season to match it. So it used to be 14 regular season games and 6 preseason. I mean, this goes back like 50, 60 years, right? Then they shaved 2 preseason games, added 2 regular season. Then it was 16 games and 4, and that's how it was, like I said, for most of all of our lives. Then just recently, 3 preseason games, but 17 regular season. And as we all know, they want to go to 18-2. As I've told you on this show before, I know they want money, and they don't want to give up that extra game, because preseason games make money, not because anybody cares about them, but because they just make you pay the same price if you're a season ticket holder as for all the rest of the games, and so it's just added revenue, which is complete BS, as we all know, but it's how this thing works. So what I've always said is, and of course, if you love football, why would you not want more football, right? Well, you know, certain things are great in part because of their scarcity. So I think you have to find that point of diminishing returns and not go past it. I've always said I would just play 2 preseason games, but keep 16 regular season games. Oh, but Bobby, that's 2 fewer games than there used to be. There used to be 20 total games, and now that would be 18. Yeah, I know. But here's what else I would do. I would add another bye week to the season. I thought 16 was a perfect number for regular season. Football's hard. It's easy to sit there on your couch and say, oh, I want to see 20 games. First of all, they all matter a little less the more you add. And second of all, you ain't the one playing them. And like, even a 10-game season seems hard to me with the physical beating these guys take. I can't imagine doing like 18 games, and that's before you even count playoffs. I mean, that to me is insane. But anyway, 16 regular season games, add a bye week, so you've got 2 bye weeks, so you still have an 18-week regular season. You still have, now you have that inventory of Monday night, Thursday night. You know, you could do all these things if you just dropped a regular season game and added a bye week. You'd still be getting your revenue. You'd still have your 2 preseason games, and I think everything would just be amped up a little more. It always feels bigger, right? It feels bigger. I mean, Major League Baseball plays 162 games. What if they played 16 games? What if Major League Baseball played once a week for 16 weeks, and that was it? Those games would feel gigantic, right? It'd feel like the weight of the world was resting on the outcomes of those games, which is what football does. And I always say this, I think football is the most popular sport in America because it's the best sport. I do think it's that. But I also think it's the most popular sport because of the way it's structured. Playing once a week, the rhythms of it. Every game's a big game. Every possession's a big possession. You could have a red zone possession in week 4 in the second quarter of some random game, and literally whether you make the playoffs or not could hinge on whether you score a touchdown or settle for a field goal on that one possession. Like, it really, everything is magnified. In baseball, oh, hell, we lost 3 in a row. Oh, no big deal. We'll get them this. You know, we'll right the ship. Whatever. There's 197 games left. You know, it takes away that urgency. It takes away that bite that you don't get in any other sport besides football. Hockey doesn't have it. Baseball doesn't have it. Basketball doesn't have it. Only football has it. So I do think football, it's my favorite sport, but I also think just the way it's laid out, independent of the actual sport itself, is another thing that makes it so popular. And I wish, one, just to help the players out and give them another extra week to have a rest, and two, just to maintain that balance. I think an 18-week, 16-game season with playoffs after that and two preseason games, I think that would be just fine. Now, I know none of this is ever going to happen. I think 18-2 will happen eventually, and they'll use the prospect of more money to dangle that in front of the Players Association, which obviously does not want to do it, but they'll do it if they get paid more, and that'll be end up what's happening. But anyway, that's for another day. I'm not worried about that right now. As far as this Saturday night, hey, I'll tune in. I'm never going to not tune in when the Bucks are playing. And at least we have some college football on Saturday night, too. It's not, you know, primo stuff. It's week zero. So there's only five games involving FBS teams, or as I still call it, Division 1A teams. And then next week is the big opening week of college football. But at least they give you a smattering. And the big one, the only one involving the ranked teams, is Iowa State and Kansas State from Dublin, Ireland on Saturday. That one's early in the day. When the Bucks and the Bills kick off, there'll be three games going on. Fresno State at Kansas, Sam Houston State at Western Kentucky, and Stanford at Hawaii. So at least you've got somewhere to go on the last channel button. And there's still baseball and stuff, although not the Rays games are of no import anymore. But you know, if you're fans of other teams, they're still playing some meaningful baseball as we get into late August and September here. So, like I said, email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, BOBBYGAMEDAY, bobbygameday@yahoo.com on Twitter. Give me a follow or tweet at me, whatever you want, at bobbygameday. One other thing I wanted to mention on today's show, before we get ready to head into the real stuff starting next week, and get this preseason stuff out of the way. Points of emphasis, always fun, right? Every year you're watching football, or mostly these happen in football, and in hockey sometimes too. And you've got your points of emphasis where you're watching games, and all of a sudden, you see about 37 flags for this one thing that you've always known about, but like all of a sudden, for whatever reason, the referees are calling a million of them in the first 2 or 3 weeks, and then after that, it kind of subsides and settles down, and that's not that big of a deal anymore. This happens every single year. It will happen this year. The point of emphasis that's being ballyhooed right now in the NFL this year is, wait for it, sportsmanship. That is what they're zeroing in on. So what do they mean by sportsmanship? They mean they're going to be watching guys like Hawks to see all the things they do that have nothing to do with the outcome of the football game so that they can throw incredibly gigantic flags that will have very much to do with the outcome of the football game. The quote from the league, this is Ari Myroff. He tweeted about this. The NFL says sportsmanship is a point of emphasis for NFL officials this season. Flags will be thrown. Quote, I'm trying to get the volume down here. I don't want to read I just want to read it myself. There's no place in the game to be standing over your opponent. There's no place in the game to have violent gestures. That's not the game of football. End quote. Let me say, first of all, I wholeheartedly agree. I cannot stand, and this goes from the youth level all the way to the NFL, I cannot stand when guys make a play, and a lot of times it's receivers or DBs, and they make a play, either make a catch over somebody or they break up a pass, whatever it is, and they immediately like stand over the guy threateningly just because they made one play. I hate that. So I do want to see that called, because I hate that whole mentality. I hate the whole mentality of, hey, I got you on this one play, independent of anything else going on. Because that's how these guys, a lot of them are. Like, they want you to know they got you on that one play. It doesn't matter that anybody who plays sports knows that no matter how much of a stud you are, sometimes you get the guy and sometimes you get got. And if you're humble enough and if you have perspective enough, you realize that it's going to be you one day, and one day the next it might be the other guy, but you've all been through it. That was my whole thing. It's always, you know, I'm not saying don't celebrate. I have no problem with celebration. I hate the taunting stuff. And I hate the idea that just because I made a play on you one time, even though you could just as easily have made a play on me earlier in the game or about to make one on me later in the game, nope, I made that play, so ha-ha, I'm going to taunt you because I was better than you for those 2 seconds just there. And a lot of it may not have even been. It might have been luck, most of it. But anyway, that'll be one. The gestures I have a bigger problem with. I could not possibly care less about those as long as they're not obscene. I know they got rid of the throat slash a while back, and they don't want gun, anything, you know, and I'm not a gun guy in any way, so I get the sentiment. Here's what I don't like. I don't like non-football things absolutely having these outsized effects on outcomes of games when they didn't have anything to do with football. And so a 15-yard penalty and an automatic first down, I mean, that is huge. Like that, have you ever watched a game? I know you already have. Everybody has. You're watching a game, and it's like third and 11. And the offense drops back. They try to make a play. It's not even close. They had no chance. Punt team coming on. Oh, wait, there's a flag down. Unsportsmanlike conduct or a late hit or something like that. 15 yards, automatic first down. And all of a sudden, that three and out, that stop is now nullified. So what I really wish, because I want to see things called like taunting. I'm not saying that I don't care about those things, but there's got to be a way. And I've always said this. I've said it before if you've heard my show. Okay? For any penalty that is like a dead ball thing or a non-football penalty, whether it's or after the ball's been released, whether it's a late hit or whether it's taunting or whether it's whatever, you know, roughing the kicker, blah, 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 okay? There should be no 15-yard penalties, first of all. They should be 10-yard penalties. And second of all, the status of the down and distance should remain unchanged. For example, it's third and 11, okay? I'm a DB. They throw a fade down the sideline to try and pick up the first down. I break it up. Then I get up and I stand over the receiver and I taunt him, okay? It was about to be fourth and 11. Oh, here comes the flag. I taunted him. Hey, that's fine. Move the whole situation up 10 yards. Move the new line of scrimmage, the offense. But it's still 4th and 11. We just take both chains, move them. We move everything up 10 yards. So it's a 10-yard penalty, but no down, no automatic first. Now, that's the killer. It's not even the yards. It's the, you know. So I would do that. And that way, you still have your penalty. You still call a penalty. Yet you didn't completely alter the entire course of the game with something that had nothing to do, and it was a judgment call to begin with. Now, I know some of you are saying, well, that's not a disincentive enough then, Bobby. Then people will just do it all the time. Again, if you've played football or any sport, you know this already, okay? Nobody wants a penalty called on them. It's not like people are going to be like, oh, la, 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 I can do whatever I want now because it's not an automatic first down. It's still a 10-yard penalty. You still go to the sideline. Your coach still yells at you. You still could get cut. All the things, okay, all those things are still the same. It's not like there's no consequence just because it wasn't an automatic first down. And yet it would preserve the integrity of these games. I think this should be the case for all personal foul penalties. First of all, 15 yards is out. There should be no such thing as a 15-yard penalty. That's way too much. 10 is the maximum. And yet, no matter what, if it was 3rd and 8 at the end of that play, I'm not talking about pass interference or defensive holding. Those are football penalties. Those are different. I'm talking about knucklehead stuff. Move the whole thing up 10 yards or back 10 yards, whoever the penalty's on, offense or defense. Still 3rd and 8, still 4th and 9. Whatever the down and distance would have been anyway, it's still what it is. That's what I would do. There's no chance of ever happening, by the way. That's just what I would do in a perfect world. But either way, I'm just telling y'all now, brace yourselves. Hopefully it's not that big of a deal. I know there was a lot of talk about it with the hip drop thing. Remember, that was the point of emphasis. And then that didn't end up being a thing at all, even though we thought they were going to try and call that, and referees in real time were going to try and make these snap judgments, and it didn't end up happening. But with this, I think you will see flags popping up that you wouldn't have seen before early in the year. And then one, players will adjust a little bit, but then also two, you know, referees at first do these things, make sure they get, okay, we did it. Now we can go back to normal. It'll start to kind of get back to normal after a few weeks go by, in my opinion. But we'll see about that. Again, we don't have any regular season data to go on yet, and we won't this weekend either. Then it's an off week next week. We'll still come back with a show next week and just kind of recap after we get the final roster done on Tuesday. We'll talk about it then at some point late next week. Then the week after, that's a game week, and we're into it, baby. And I'll tell you what, I'm excited, like always. Hey, one more game in the preseason. We can grin and bear through it. It's better than nothing. It's better than if there was no game this weekend, right? It's still something to watch. And that's about all I can say for week 3 in the preseason. And hope that nobody else sustains any injury, at least not a serious one, as the Bucks and the Bills. Saturday night, 7:30. Thank you for listening. Email me if you want, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. If you want a fridge schedule, thanks to the Joes for putting me on this platform. JoeBucksFan.com, best place anywhere, TV, internet, radio for Bucks coverage. Enjoy the preseason finale. Enjoy the beginning of college football. Enjoy whatever else you got going on this weekend. Be safe. Have fun. I'll be back next weekend wherever you are. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.